I invite you to open your scripture to Joshua chapter number 1, where we're going to take up the story in just a moment at verse number 10. First, let me tell you that if you're interested in having my chronological companion to the Bible, which is just a very detailed outline of scripture in chronological order, lots of notes explaining why certain dates are picked by me for certain events. You just need to go to the website, intotheword2020.com, or you can go to the old website, which still has all these things, intotheword.net, and just look for the resources section with the chronological companion to the Bible. In my research, in my work, I believe that the 41st year of the Exodus, the year that we're looking at right now at the beginning of the book of Joshua, was basically the year 1416 BC. And that the first month of that Jewish year began in April, early April. And so the spies were sent over the Jordan River by Joshua in that early spring, with the intention of collecting intelligence and bringing it back to their commander, who could then use it as they cross the Jordan and prepare to assail the first fortified city of the Canaanites. So we know that the spies were hiding out for about 3 days, just to the west of the city of Jericho. And we know that they got back just in time for the Israelis to break camp and go down to the Jordan River to prepare for the crossing. So that helps us establish the chronology pretty well. I believe the spies escaped from Jericho on the 6th day of the first month, which would have been Thursday night into Friday. Then, the part that we're about to read in the book of Joshua takes place on the 7th day of the first Jewish month, which happened to be a Saturday. So, it kicks off with sunset on Friday, and the full day of it is on Saturday itself. And this is what happened on that Sabbath day, I believe, the 7th day of the first Jewish month in the 41st year of the Exodus. Verse 10 of Joshua 1. Joshua commanded the officers of the people, "Pass through the midst of the camp and command the people, prepare your provisions, for within 3 days you are to pass over this Jordan to go in to take possession of the land that he who is your God is giving you to possess." So, more than likely, this is toward the end of Saturday, because they've had their day of rest, their day of worship, their day of recuperation. Pretty soon the sun is going to go down, and these officers are telling them, once the first day of the week starts, you need to start collecting and preparing to break camp and go to the crossing site of the Jordan. So get everything ready for the next big move. Now, verse 12. To the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. These are the groups that have made special arrangements with Moses, and therefore with God, and now Joshua is aware of it, that they are going to inherit their property on the east side of the Jordan. They've already taken that land in the Sihon and Og wars, and they are going to leave a representative portion of their fighting forces in these fortified cities that they've taken, along with their families and their animals. But they have made the promise that they will send a significant representative fighting force into the promised land as a vanguard, as in the first in a fight. So Joshua is going to remind them of that. Verse 13, remember the word that Moses, the servant of He Who Is, commanded you, saying, He who is your God is providing you a place of rest and will give you this land, meaning the annexed territories on the eastern side of the Jordan. Verse 14, your wives, your little ones, and your livestock shall remain in the land that Moses gave you beyond the Jordan, but all the men of valor among you shall pass over armed before your brothers and shall help them, until He who is gives rest to your brothers as He has to you, and they also take possession of the land that He who is your God is giving you. Then you shall return to the land of your possession and shall possess it, the land that Moses, the servant of He Who Is, gave you beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise. So keep the promise. You have to send a big military force over at the head of the Israelis until they get their property, just like you've got yours. Verse 16, they answered Joshua, all that you have commanded us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. Only may He who is your God be with you as He was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your commandment and disobeys your words, whatever you command him shall be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. So we have that echo again. Moses said it to Joshua. God said it to Joshua. And now the heads of these this vanguard from the eastern tribes is saying it to Joshua. You need to take charge. You need to be brave. You need to be confident. You need to represent God and do the right thing. Don't be afraid, Joshua. We will follow you. You are God's man. And so this is really important for Joshua because he is in an unusual position, a very difficult position. He has been following the great prophet Moses, who accomplished great miraculous things. And he's been following him for 40 years. Now that great man is gone, and he's trying to fill those sandals. That's a tough proposition. And he is concerned that he can do it well. But everybody keeps telling him, you're the right man for the job. Just go for it. So they tell him that. And the next thing that we see in the scripture we've already talked about is about the spies and how they've already gone across and they've done their work and they've been hiding out for 3 days. And then we get down to chapter number 2, verse number 20. Let's read 22 again. They departed and went into the hills and remained there 3 days until the pursuers returned, and the pursuers searched all along the way and found nothing. So that's the 3 day period that would go from the 6th to the 7th to the 8th. And so that's a 3 day time period that the spies were hiding out, and the authorities of Jericho have been looking for them between Jericho and the river, didn't find them. And so now the spies figure it's safe to make a break for the river, which means they will cross the river and arrive at the Israeli encampment of Shittim in the plains of Moab on the 9th day of the first month, which is going to be, that's going to be a Sunday night. I believe they arrive. Verse 23, then the two men returned. They came down from the hills, passed over, came to Joshua the son of Nun, and they told him all that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, truly, He who is has given all the land into our hands, and also all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us. So they arrive back on the evening before the day that Israel's going to move their encampment from Shittim to the Jordan. And they let Joshua know, hey, everything's moving forward exactly as God has told you. The people on that side of the river are scared to death of us. They're actually scared to death of God. And they're even melting away, meaning a lot of them are fleeing the cities. They are running away from the cities, exactly again as God said would be the case for many of the Canaanites. So Joshua now has got his spy report, and he is ready to move the encampment as God told him on the third day, which would be the daylight hours of the ninth month of the ninth day of the first month of the Jewish year, which means we have now moved into Monday. Chapter 3, verse 1. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from Shittim. Shittim just means acacia trees. It's the plains of Moab. If you look on something like Google Earth, which I recommend as being very useful to get a 3D viewpoint on how all this stuff looks, to the east of Jericho, the modern-day city of Jericho, across the Jordan River, you see this bunch of developed agricultural land. It's a great big green patch that has an indentation into the mountains of Moab, or the mountains of Jordan is where it's actually at now. Somewhere in that vicinity, about 10 to 12 miles east of Jericho's mound, that's where the encampment of the Israelis has been for the last several months. So now, on the ninth day of the first month, they break that camp and they follow the glory of God right down to the shoreline of the Jordan River, which is in flood stage right now because that's the normal cycle of the river in the spring. That's about 6 miles or so, 5 or 6 miles. So they don't take very much time to break the camp and move down there. And they probably do not set up any encampment on the edge of the River Jordan. They leave everything packed up. They probably just sleep in little sleeping bags or in their sleeping clothes because they know they're going to cross the next morning. So Joshua gets up and they came to the Jordan, he and all the people of Israel. They lodged there before they passed over. At the end of the 3 days, the officers went through the camp and commanded the people, as soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of He who is your God being carried by the Levitical priests, then you shall set out from your place and follow it. So this is where they've arrived at the crossing site. And the sun is going down, which is going to kick off the 10th day of the first Jewish month. So it's Monday night. And those same officers go back through the land, or back through the encampment, and say, all right, don't get too comfortable, because tomorrow morning, when you see the Ark of God's presence on the move, you have to move with it. Now, there's going to be some guidelines about this. Verse 4. Yet there shall be a distance between you and it about 2,000 cubits. Now, just using the 18-inch cubit, which is the more modern cubit, you're talking about 3,000 feet. For the longer cubit, which I think is what they were using at this time, it's even farther, but a few hundred feet farther. So let's just think about the idea of 10 football fields. That's how much distance they have to leave between themselves and the Ark of the Covenant whenever they cross the Jordan. So we're going to have a very wide crossing area because they're either going to flow to the north or the south of the Ark and stay at least 10 football fields away, or they're going to flow on both sides of the Ark, maintaining that 10 football fields distance from the Ark of the Covenant. Now, it's interesting. We can pin down very clearly about a 4-mile stretch of the Jordan River where this crossing has to take place. And the reason for it is this. On the Jericho side of the river, the plains of Jericho is bounded on the north by a wadi, which is a wet weather stream, and on the south by another wadi, another wet weather stream. And these wet weather streams are basically gullies. They're a pain to get across. You'd rather not have to do it. So the crossing site has to be between those two wet weather streams. Now, it just so happens that there is a fording point, very old, that is down in the first mile from the south of that range that we're talking about. It's got a modern-day Jewish name as Kesser al-Yahud. And it is the traditional site for the crossing of the Jordan and for the immersion of Jesus, which we know took place in this same vicinity. And it is also the traditional site where the prophet Ezekiel crossed, the prophet Elijah crossed before he was carried away by God's presence into the heavens by the fiery chariot and the whirlwind of God. So all of those traditional things are located right here near a place called Kesser al-Yahud. I've seen it, been there. It is a very interesting site to go to. So when you stand at that site, you know that you are within a couple of miles of where the Ark of the Covenant came across the Jordan River, and where the Jewish people came across, keeping some significant distance between themselves and the Ark of the Covenant. Now, verse number 5 of Joshua 3. Then Joshua said to the people, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow he who is will do wonders among you." Now, he has not yet explained to the people what that wonder is going to be yet, apparently. For all they know, they're basically going to have to swim across the Jordan and float some of their belongings, because they've got carts and stuff like that, across the river, maybe using rope lines, the sort of thing that you would do to get across a flooded river. But that's not the way it's going to happen. Joshua is hinting, you're going to see something special tomorrow. Get ready for it. Verse number 6. Joshua said to the priest, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass before the people." So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. So now we're at tomorrow morning. It's now the 10th day of the first Jewish month. And if you want to know my modern style date for that. We're talking about Tuesday, the 18th of April, 1416 BC. So Joshua tells the priests, the six or the 12 guys that carry the Ark of the Covenant, apparently, I need you to pick it up on its carrying posts and move forward toward the river. Verse 7. He who is said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And as for you, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, when you come to the brink of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. And Joshua said to the people of God, or the people of Israel, come here, listen to the words of he who is your God. Joshua said, here is how you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, and the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is passing over before you into the Jordan. Now, therefore, take 12 men from the tribes of Israel, from each tribe a man. And when the soles of the priests of the feet of the priests bearing the ark of he who is the Lord of all the earth shall rest in the waters of the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off from flowing, and the waters coming down from above shall stand in one heap. All right, so here it is. It's Tuesday morning, the 10th day of the first Jewish month. It's the preparation day when they designated whatever lambs they were going to use for the Passover. So that's going to happen today as well. And they're at the edge of the flood stage Jordan. So it's not inside its normal banks. It's flowing higher than it usually does. They're right on the edge. They're all gathered around watching the Ark of the Covenant, which is right at the edge of these floodwaters. And they're all about 3 football lengths away from the Ark. And Joshua addresses them and says, I want you to watch what's about to happen, because God is going to show you he is trustworthy. He is powerful. And he is going to take you in to the promised land himself. Now, picture again what the Ark of the Covenant looks like here. It's the throne of God. And above the Ark of the Covenant goes the tower of God's visible presence up and over above them as a canopy. And so there's the Ark at the edge. And they've got 12 guys on standby. One from each of the tribes. They're going to do something special. And they're watching for the next part of the story. Verse 14. So when the people set out from their tents to pass over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, as soon as those bearing the Ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the Ark were dipped into the brink of the water. Now the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of the harvest. So that's where we find out it's normal for the Jordan to be outside of its banks today. And by the way, the Jordan River today is nothing like it was in the days of Joshua. The Jordan River today is being tapped by water needs all the way up to the north where it starts. So it is only a trickle compared to what it was in the ancient times. So if you see pictures of Jordan, and like I said, I was there not too terribly long ago again, and it's not super impressive of a stream. You can actually walk across it pretty easily here at the site that we visited in the south. It would have been much more impressive back in the time of Joshua, especially when it's at full stage flood. So the priest's ankles get wet, And verse 16, the waters coming down from above stood and rose up in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is by Zarethan, and those flowing down toward the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, that's the Dead Sea, were completely cut off. Now, in the couple of minutes we've got left here, I want you to develop the full comprehension of the miraculous nature of this crossing of the Jordan. The city of Zarethan is about 40 miles upstream because it's up and related to Jezreel and Bethshan and places like that. So about 40 miles upstream is where the water was cut off. Well, water does not flow terribly fast, does it? Even at its fastest. So this water had to be turned off several hours previous to the priest's ankles touching it in order for it to suddenly go down. So God has timed everything perfectly so that the moment the priest walked into the water, it dries up as they're walking down into the bed of the Jordan, because he turned off the tap several hours earlier, 10 or more hours earlier, 40 miles to the north. And so the Israelis see this happen right in front of them. And God probably also dries it up, just like he did with the crossing of the Red Sea, so that the mud becomes hard ground. And the Israelis see, verse 17, that the people were going to be able to pass over opposite Jericho, and the priest bearing the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan. And all Israel was passing over on dry ground until the nation finished passing over the Jordan. So a miracle of timing to dry it out at just the right time for the Israelis to go across on either side, or perhaps both, of the Ark of the Covenant right into the Promised Land for the very first time.